This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch.
You can't change your past, but Christ can. Christ can change the past by covering your sins with his blood and forgiving all the sins and mistakes you ever made. That's a wonderful thing, because God has a set of tapes in which everything you've ever said and everything you've ever done and everything you've ever thought is there and will be played at the judgment. But if you come to Christ and surrender totally to him, he wipes out the tapes. He erases the tapes, and no one will ever hear them.
Dr. Billy Graham, who took the gospel to the corners of the earth, has gone home to be with the Lord. Dr. Graham passed away this morning at the age of 99. The Hour of Decision program aired for 66 years on Sunday evenings. I recall listening to it many, many times on the way to church as a young boy on Sunday evenings. James Robinson, an evangelist himself, was a close friend of Billy Graham. He'll join us later here on Washington Watch. And our bold advance across the country meeting with partners continues. We're in Texas today after events in Pennsylvania and Ohio on Monday and Tuesday. Being in the Lone Star State, we'll talk with one of the men who represents this state in the 1st Congressional District, our good friend Louis Gohmert. We'll talk to him about the impact of the GOP tax reform and how it is impacting the families of America. And I'll ask him this as well. Is the tax cut unpatriotic, as Nancy Pelosi claims? That's coming up in just a moment when Louis Gohmert is here. Also, five states have now passed resolutions warning of the public health crisis of pornography. That, by the way, is also in the RNC platform. FRC's Peter Sprigg testified earlier this week in the state of Maryland in support of one such resolution. He'll join us to explain why states are now starting to address what has been called a scourge on society. We're going to be talking about that. And our own General Jerry Boykin is on the road with us this week. He'll join me later to talk about bold advance and the latest in the battle over who will control our nation's military, the commander-in-chief or unelected judges. That's coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, you can find it all later at TonyPerkins.com, where all of our programs are archived. If you want to keep up with me on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Well, Nancy Pelosi, she just doesn't know when to quit. She first called the proposed tax reform plan Armageddon. Well, when Armageddon didn't come to pass, she's now changed her tune. This is what she had to say about the latest on the tax cut.
If what you're doing is cutting the taxes at the high end and therefore not being allowed to invest in the future, you're doing a grave disservice to our country.
Patriotic. Most people have to struggle to make ends meet. No, we're not talking about that. So in any event,
we're not the only ones who disagree with Nancy Pelosi's mischaracterization of giving more money to families in America. Not only is it not unpatriotic, I think it's actually in keeping with the Constitution to allow people to keep what they earn. And let's see what our next guest thinks about that as well. Joining us now, Congressman Louis Gohmert. He represents the 1st Congressional District of the Lone Star State. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee and is one of the most outspoken conservative voices in Congress, and he's a dear friend. Louis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's great to talk to you anytime, Tony. Thank you. And, yeah, that's rather interesting. She had at least a couple of folks in her audience that recognized that $1,000, $2,000 are crumbs to a multimillionaire, but they are greatly appreciated by most Americans. She is badly out of touch. And you know, if you're going to call getting people's money back in their own pockets Armageddon, then when you have a terribly, horribly tragic group of students killed, you've kind of exhausted what you might use to parallel it. If getting people their own money is Armageddon, where do you go after a tragic shooting? She's kind of shot herself in the foot, so to speak.
Well, I think it's a mixed-up worldview where, in their view, government has to control everything, including what goes into the family budget and how the family will spend it. But the polling shows that, and this is, Louis, this is one of the areas, and I've talked about this before on the program, this is one of the areas where I do think the Republicans, and I'm talking about the Republican leadership, actually showed some courage and leadership. Oftentimes, they won't lead where the people are not. They follow the people more than they lead them. But in this case, the polling was clearly against this tax reform plan.
Yep.
But now the people have caught up, realizing that this was a good thing.
Yeah, and that is so true. But I can tell you from my perspective, if we had not had a president that would not give up, we would not have had the tax bill, because the feeling normally in Congress is, well, if the polls are against us, we got to drop it. And, they're just so much is driven by polls. But thankfully, we had a president that kept pushing, no, let's get it done. You guys work it out. He wasn't pushing details as much as he was, just get it done. And wow. When you know you're right, and you know the polls are going to catch up, it does make a difference, which kind of brings me to the point you were making about Billy Graham. What an awesome man. I love to watch his crusades. I did so many times, usually reduced to tears by the end. Just such a powerful, powerful man. He led by example. And the tragic shooting down in Parkland, this kid didn't know his parents, apparently, raised in foster home. They died. He had nobody. Nobody loved him. Nobody cared about him. And it had to have broken Billy Graham's heart to see our nation get to a point where we refuse to teach morality. We refuse to teach right and wrong. The two-parent home has come under attack and has been destroyed. And really, I've given this a lot of thought. When you get rid of teaching morality, you get rid of, you just destroy the foundational home that's been the real foundation for every civilization, then if you want to stay safe, you're going to have to give up all your constitutional rights, at least most of them, because as John Adams said, this government was only intended to govern a moral and religious people. It's not fit to govern any other. And it just kind of brings things full circle with what we've done was a great thing with taxes. You're right. It's one of the most patriotic things we can do, let people keep their own money. But we do need to cut our spending so that we don't, continue in the immorality of spending future generations' money. But my gosh, we have got to get back to teaching right and wrong, teaching there is an unwavering, as C.S. Lewis talked about, this unwavering force that he found was God in the universe that ensures there is an ultimate right and wrong. Some may get closer than others, like he said, a sheet of music. Some may sing more perfectly than others, but it doesn't mean the sheet of music doesn't exist. We've got to get back to that. The tax bill will help free some people up a little bit. It'll make the economy better. It'll be a great thing. But we've got to get back to understanding there is a right or wrong.
Without question. And what is interesting, you talk about morality. We've slipped from teaching morality because morality doesn't work, as George Washington warned the nation in his farewell address when he said that, the two great pillars of this experiment are religion and morality. And he cautioned, don't think that you can have morality without religion. And he wasn't talking about, he was talking about Christianity. He was talking about the religion that this nation was founded upon. And when we have kicked God out of our schools, we have created a moral vacuum, and it's going to be filled with something. And liberals are scratching their heads saying, well, we've got to control the instruments. No, we have to impact the hearts and minds of children, letting them know that they have value and their lives have meaning.
Yep, and they have so much value. As Billy Graham preached over and over, you have so much value that God would even send his son to be the sacrificial lamb for your life so you can live in eternity in heaven. It's an amazing story that's been around as long as this country has. Well, actually, much longer than that, but it certainly predates the country, but it has been a founding part of the country. And, you know, despite what people try to cover up, you know, I keep expecting somebody to demand that Lincoln's second inaugural be wiped off the inside of the Lincoln Memorial North Wall.
Don't give him any ideas.
Well, but we both, you talk about North and South, you both read the same Bible, both pray to the same God. You know, well, at that time they did. That was an utterly truthful statement. But anyway, this is a tragic time, and I kind of feel like God said, Billy, you've been such a faithful servant. It's time to come home. You don't have to see what may be ahead for the United States, but it's very clear to me, we either get back on track, there is a God, and everybody doesn't have to believe in him, just like God would have spared Sodom and Gomorrah for even one good person. Well, there are lots of them in the United States that know God, that that want us to, you know, turn from our wicked ways and embrace the Lord, ask forgiveness, and he will heal this country. It doesn't have to be everybody, just those called by his name. And I think what we have right now is a chance. God's given us a chance. And we have got to take advantage of that chance, get back on track. And you know, this kid, I mean, it appears that he was crying out for attention every way he could. And even the FBI ignored him. It's just another tragic example of what's happened with our FBI. But
and a reminder, as a nation, we need to pray like never before.
Exactly, like never before. Exactly.
Louis Gohmert,
you're right on.
Up against a break. Thanks so much for being with us. As always, great to have you on the program, my friend.
I love you, my brother. Thank you so much, Tony.
All right, Congressman Louis Gohmert represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas, one of the great conservative leaders in our Congress, a true believer who is serving the Lord and the people of this country. You know, we're going to be talking more about America's pastor when we return. We'll discuss the impact of the Reverend Billy Graham's life on generations yet to come with James Robinson, founder and president of the Christian Relief Organization Life Outreach International. In my view, you know, it's not what is behind a man that makes him so great. And that's important in building a legacy, but it's what's before him. You know, Billy Graham's life continues through those he imparted his life into, and chief of all, his children, who are building upon the foundation that he laid. And in many ways, I believe the modern-day evangelical movement that's impacting Hollywood politics, he laid the foundation for by making evangelicalism mainstream. All right, when we come back, my good friend James Robinson. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, if you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. You can kind of keep up with us. This week, it's kind of like, where's Waldo? We're all over the country. All right, the Reverend Billy Graham, who transformed America's religious life, its understanding of the gospel and Jesus Christ through his preaching. He became a counselor to presidents and the most widely heard Christian evangelist in history. He died this morning. He was 99. In his final years, he battled cancer, pneumonia, and other ailments. He died at his home in North Carolina. With us now is James Robinson. He is the founder and president of the Christian relief organization Life Outreach International. And he was very close to Billy Graham. In fact, Billy Graham mentored him and helped lead him to also become a great evangelist in the United States, and he's a great friend of mine. James, welcome to Washington Watch once again.
Well, thank you, Tony, and it's, as Billy Graham's daughter said to me this morning in a text very early, it's a glorious day. Dad is seeing Jesus and Mother.
Yeah.
Right now.
I was actually texting with Franklin today, and I see that the legacy that Billy Graham has left is not just in what he built and what he did, but it's who he invested his life in. I mean, I know Ann very well. I know Franklin well, work with them. They are uncompromising in the gospel. But you also are a product of that.
Well, he began to reach out to me when I was 19, and this week Betty and I celebrate our 55th wedding anniversary. Within 6 months after we were married, and I was preaching in the meetings were so blessed of God that we actually were in a citywide crusade in Houston that extended a week, and Billy heard about it and immediately began to just get tapes of me preaching and made it clear that he believed I was really anointed. And then he, of all things, set up our ministry organization. And he said, you're going to need a 501c3. You're going to need this. And he set it up right to think that he did that. And then he stayed in touch with me throughout my ministry. We became very close. He actually, Tony, commissioned me to win Franklin to Christ as a rebellious teenager when Franklin was in Texas at Laterno College and I was at East Texas Baptist University, 20 minutes away. And he told me Franklin loves to fish and hunt, and he said, I know you do. Why don't you take him, do some stuff? I made several appointments with Franklin. He broke every one of them. As a matter of fact, after he became converted, which Billy told me about that in a round of golf that we were playing together when I was in my early 30s, and he started crying. He's sitting on the golf cart, and he's tearing up. He said, let me tell you about my boy. And he told me about the conversion of Franklin. It was glorious. And I said, well, I failed, didn't I, Billy? He said, well, because I asked Franklin, why did you keep breaking all those dates to go fishing and stuff? And he said, well, I was getting drunk and smoking cigarettes. And Billy said, well, it's a change. And he is absolutely transformed. And we were blessed to begin helping Franklin with Samaritan's Purse the moment he took over the leadership of that organization. And we stayed close. But Billy invested in me. And we were friends. And matter of fact, you look on the stream today, stream.org, you'll see a picture of me and Betty sitting in his home just a few years ago there in North Carolina. And Billy was saying throughout the day, I want to go. I want to go be with Ruth. I'm ready to go. And there was no question he was. And I know that Ruth texted me this morning that, you know, it is a glorious day because Dad's with Jesus and with Mother. And what an impact he made. I do want to tell you something a moment about a change that came in my life that I think you're witnessing the importance of, and that's spiritual unity.
He was criticized in his early days, in the 50s and 60s, for who he hung around with. I mean, he went across denominational lines. Evangelicals and the conservatives did not really want to do much with charismatics, and you know, he broke that mold.
Well, and he even had Catholics who were encouraged to come, and even had some of their leaders sit on the platform. Well, you know, Jerry Falwell and I were very close, and Jerry was sharing, man, we got to talk to Billy, you know. Well, I did, because I was close to him. And I actually scolded him. I said, why do you do this? And Billy just looked at me and he said, do you know the people you're telling me to avoid? I said, I don't know them. He said, well, I do. I've spent time with them. And he said, I have found that there's so many of them who love Jesus. And he said this. He said, I could not hold a crusade outside the United States if it were not for Pentecostals and Charismatics. Well, that kind of set me back. But I actually took his advice. It led to one of the greatest transformations that a person could ever experience. Because I began to go to the leaders. One of the first was Oral Roberts. But I went right down the line and began to meet with them. And Tony, invariably, we'd be weeping together. Oral said, I was lonely. I was cut off from even my own people. I was cut off from by the Methodists. And he said, you coming to me today, it's just one of the greatest things that ever happened. He's just crying. And I began to encourage leaders to come and meet with Oral. I began to get, you know today, Tony, because you've been in many meetings with me. I've been blessed to bring leaders together across all denominational lines. And that's the council that has surrounded the president, and you watched that happen. And you watched my effort to get them to sit at the table of reason and pray together. So it was Billy Graham that led me to literally begin to spend time with people I'd talked to avoid. Now, I've never, and neither did Billy, and neither will Franklin. We don't compromise the Word of God. We don't compromise principles. Right. And we'll recognize there may be some points of disagreement, but we can still be a healthy family that is reflecting the Father that we claim to know through Jesus Christ.
And in many ways, Billy Graham, in preaching the gospel, while he counseled presidents, he stayed nonpartisan, but in many ways, he laid the foundation for what we're seeing today in terms of the evangelical, if you will, kind of political influence that we're seeing around this president.
Well, what happened that was so dramatic, and we just heard someone on a large network make fun of someone for saying that they talk to God and God talks to them, when Jesus made it clear, my sheep hear my voice. And I write about this on the stream today. It's on the front of the stream. By the way, Ann Graham Lott sent everybody to the stream yesterday to read. She said one of the most powerful articles she's ever seen. And so you can read that on the stream. But here's what Billy did. He called me and Bill Bright, and he said, I stood in Red Square, and God told me that we have 1,000 days of freedom left in the United States. 1,000 days, 3 years. I know God told me that. And he called a prayer meeting, and Tony, that prayer meeting extended the life of freedom in this nation, because he called a group of men. He asked me to get them to come to the meeting. And it was Pat Robertson, Bill Bright, Adrian Rogers, Charles Stanley, and my pastor, James Draper. We had a prayer meeting that led to Baptists actually realizing we needed a stronger leader than we had at the time. And God gave us a miracle in 1980.
And we're still living that miracle today. James Robinson, thank you so much for being with us today, my friend.
Well, Tony, thank you for everything you do for the cause of Christ and for freedom. God bless you.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch. FRC's Peter Sprigg is here when we return.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're one of those on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. All right, Maryland is the latest state declaring pornography a public health crisis. Porn websites now constitute 30% of all web traffic, generating more hits than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. Joining us now is FRC's Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council. He testified this week before the Maryland House of Delegates. Peter, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Peter, there is now an extensive body of research regarding the harms of pornography, and finally, state legislators are taking note of that.
That's right. A number of states, I believe there are five states that have already passed resolutions declaring pornography to be a public health crisis. Maybe six, because I just saw a news story this morning that Florida adopted their resolution just yesterday. And the one in Maryland has been introduced in both houses of their state legislature. I've had the opportunity to testify in favor of it in both houses, and we hope that they will act in adopting such a resolution as well. But there is an increasing body of evidence showing that the reason to be opposed to pornography is not just because of moral concerns about what it depicts about sexuality, but the actual impact that it's having on our society.
Yeah. Utah being the first state. Now, as a result of that, actually, I was involved in getting language into the RNC, the GOP platform, rather, at the RNC convention. And this is what the RNC platform states. Pornography, with its harmful effects, especially on children, has become a public health crisis that is destroying the lives of millions. We encourage states to continue to fight this public menace and pledge our commitment to children's safety and well-being. Finally, we're seeing this addressed. How are states going to get a handle on this, given the age of the Internet?
Well, it's a challenge, and that's why this is a little bit of an innovative approach to the issue, and I have to give a little shout out to our friends over at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, who have kind of driven this approach. But by having a resolution, the idea is, as a first step at least, to raise public awareness about the harms of pornography, but to do so in an official sort of context. context so that our legislators are acknowledging that this is a serious problem. It's probably a more difficult step to get prosecutors to actually begin prosecuting laws on obscenity, the laws that forbid obscenity. There's a misconception on the part of a lot of people that somehow pornography is legal because it's protected by free speech. Now, that may be true of some forms of softcore pornography, but the real hardcore pornography meets the legal definition of obscenity, and it is not legal. And yet, for decades, probably since the Reagan administration, we've really seen very little effort put forth on either the state or federal level to prosecute this activity, which is criminal in nature. It's a challenge in the time of the internet. I mean, I think the internet has made it so much easier to access pornography, and that's part of the reason why the harms are we're seeing the harms sort of escalate.
We're told, and we've heard for many years, even when you talk about the illegal obscenity that is there on the internet and other sources, that it's a victimless crime. So what's the deal? So they break a few laws. It doesn't affect anybody.
Well, the interesting thing is, I think in this era of greater awareness of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and just general mistreatment of women by men, we should be aware of the role that pornography plays in promoting that. And again, where the research has shown that men who are consumers of pornography, a lot of people like of our generation who may think of pornography as Playboy centerfolds or something, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about very graphic, explicit films and videos of often very extreme forms of behavior, most of which are degrading to women. This cannot help but result in a culture and a society that degrades women in real life. And I think, you know, when we look at the Me Too movement and everything and ask ourselves, and I said this in my testimony, we ask ourselves, how did men get to be such pigs? The answer, at least in part, is they learned it from pornography.
Hmm. Peter, before we go, we're up against a break, but very quickly, you had a piece that you published today regarding Dr. Billy Graham, because it is through his ministry that you came to Christ.
That's right. I committed my life to Christ at a Billy Graham crusade in Boston in 1982. And so that was certainly a turning point in my life, and I will forever be grateful for his ministry.
Well, and we are too, for many reasons, but you're one of them. We're so glad to have you on the FRC team. Peter, you do a great job. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council. Just a great man of God, and serves the Lord with great humility. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to another tremendous warrior. General Jerry Boykin is going to join me. We're going to talk about bold advance. Again, we're crisscrossing the country talking with supporters about what we're going to be doing in the midterm elections to register, inform, and mobilize Christians, the evangelicals that made such a big difference in 2016. We're going to talk about that and the crisis brewing in our military, courts, or the commander-in-chief. That's next. Don't go away.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. Before we get to my next special guest, who is very special, I'll stop there till I introduce him. I want to finish just a couple of thoughts on the interview with Peter Sprigg about the move that's happening in states across the nation regarding the public health crisis related to pornography. This is another example, and I've talked about this many, many times. This is an example of how the GOP platform is used. It's not just the president, although this president has used the platform as justification, if you will, on several of the policies that he has pushed, and those supporting those policies have used it with him. But you're seeing it at the state level, even all the way down to the school board level, where it talks about choice. So this is why that document is so important. Once again, we see it playing out. And let me say this. And I wrote about this yesterday in the update, Peter's testimony. You can find it at TonyPerkins.com or FRC.org. I would encourage you to contact your member of your state legislature, whatever state you live in, and encourage them to introduce a resolution as well, calling attention to this public health crisis of pornography. It is serious. It really is. And as Peter pointed out, you know, a lot of people just think it's the you know, Playboy magazine and stuff like that. It's way, way beyond that, and it's pernicious. It's affecting children. Many children, we didn't even talk about this with Peter, many children having their first exposure to pornography when they're 11, 12 years old, and it is it's like a cancer. And there was an article, which actually about a year ago, I believe it was in Time. I may have the publication wrong. But it was a front page cover story, talking about the health effects of this and how it is affecting relationships. And this was not, again, it was not a moral piece on it. It was just based on the science and the health implications of it. But anyway, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. In a televised speech on Monday, a senior Iranian official said that the Israeli city of Tel Aviv would be leveled to the ground. That's a quote. If Israel were to attack Iran, it also said that the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would not escape with his life. Now, this comes after there was a Iranian drone that was shot down by the Israelis. Joining us now is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He is the former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence under President George W. Bush. He was a founding member of Delta Force. He is, he's a great American, and he's also the FRC Executive Vice President, and he's on the road with us on our Bold Advance Blitz. General, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. It's a little colder here in Texas than I thought it would
be. Well, I know. I mean, we're going through, I think, every climate. We're getting a chance to experience everything, snow, rain, wind. Yeah. We spent 2.5 hours circling Arkansas yesterday as we took a almost felt like that 5-hour tour that Gilligan and the skipper had, because we spent 4.5 hours on a 2-hour flight.
Yeah, and it was 70 degrees in Columbus, Ohio, and we landed here in Dallas, Texas, and it was in the 30s. So, go figure.
And from here, we go to Atlanta this week. Bold Advance, going across the country, meeting with partners, supporters to talk about the importance of engaging churches in the midterm election. This midterm election is extremely important for the future of the country.
Yeah, it is. Look, as you have pointed out during our briefings here, there have already been articles of impeachment offered on Donald Trump. Nancy Pelosi, if she becomes the Speaker of the House again, there is no question that Trump will be impeached. And quite frankly, he has some people in his own party that will probably vote for impeachment. Now, the question is, will the Senate actually remove him, which, remember, Bill Clinton was impeached, but they didn't remove him. The Senate didn't. But I think this election is so critical, because if we want to avoid that, we've got to make sure that the Republicans don't cede the House to the Democratic Party.
And a lot of effort underway to make that happen. Nancy Pelosi, she's flexing her fingers, getting ready to grab the gavel again.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I think we may have talked about this with Michelle on Monday when she was on the program, that the movie Black Panther, mm-hmm. that is, mm-hmm. setting records in terms of attendance. George Soros, through different means, is funding voter registration at this. So through one of the Black Lives Matters organizations, there is clearly an intent to try to drive voter turnout that would benefit the Democratic Party.
That's exactly right. I don't know that, at least that I have been aware of, I don't think I've ever seen the liberal left, the Democratic Party specifically, more engaged and more energized, because they've got a lot at stake here. I mean, they fundamentally feel like they lost everything, and everything that they had worked for during the 8 years of Obama is at stake now. And I think that the money that's going into it, not just from Soros is big, but there's a lot of different organizations like Human Rights Campaign that are putting big money into the 2018 election.
The difference between Donald Trump and other Republicans that have followed in the wake of Democratic presidents and administrations is that, generally speaking, the Democrats, since, I would go back to FDR, have been building a liberal infrastructure mm-hmm. in this country that have been used with each Democratic administration. They have been progressively advancing a statist worldview and infrastructure. Generally speaking, a Republican comes in and they just push pause. They spend 4-8 years, and then the Democrats go back and pick up where they left off. The difference with Donald Trump, and this is why I think we see the left so exercised about this, is that he's dismantling that liberal leftist infrastructure, and they can't take that.
One of the things that people need to realize is that Donald Trump is deregulating. And I sat through a briefing the other day. from one of his people. He is deregulating. See, the Democrats have been all about regulation, right, controlling.
Through bureaucrats.
Through bureaucrats, controlling everything through bureaucrats. But what has Trump done? For every regulation that's passed, he has eliminated 22. Now, that's a significant activity.
That's dismantling that's taking place, and it's driving them crazy. And then, folks, that's why we're out across the country, just as in the 2016 election when evangelicals played such a significant role. We're talking about these policies and the fact that we must continue this dismantling and the rebuilding of the foundation that made America the nation that it is. So check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Make sure you're plugged in and you're involved. Wherever you are, you can be involved. In fact, in your church, I would challenge you to put together a culture impact team in your church if you don't have one. If you want to know how to do it, contact me. Email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com, and I will make sure we get the information so you can set up a culture impact team in your church. Again, email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. All right, General, I want to shift gears here for a moment. A couple other issues I want to talk about. The downing of the Iranian drone on February the 10th was the first direct confrontation between Israel and Iran. Tensions seem to be building there. I mean, the Middle East has already been a hotbed, but between those two countries in particular, especially with this rhetoric on Monday, where's this going to lead?
Yeah, I think we're going to see more provocation by the Iranians. Now, do I think that we're going to see a nuclear exchange? Not in the short term, no. But I think that the Iranians will continue to provoke Israel. And keep in mind, there's been a surrogate war going on there for a long time, and that is Iran through their surrogates, Hezbollah, which they created. They still fund today, and South Lebanon is full of Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the one that lobs the rockets and the missiles and all over into Israel. And by the way, they now estimate that there may be as many as 150,000 to 60,000 missiles and rockets in South Lebanon in the control of Hezbollah. So I think it's going to be a surge.
How many? Mention that number again.
150,000 to 160,000.
150,000 to 160,000. That's
right.
A lot.
That's a lot. And that has all been infiltrated in there through Syria, primarily through Syria. Some may have come in by the ports on the Mediterranean, but most of it through Syria. And it's all paid for and supplied by Iran. So a surrogate warfare, I see, that is ongoing today. But I think you'll see more provocation by the Iranians. What were they doing the other day when they flew that drone in there? I think they were testing Israel's reaction time and capabilities.
I want to address another issue with you, General. There's a kind of an upcoming announcement, report coming out of the Pentagon on an issue that you have talked about very frequently in terms of its effect upon readiness and recruiting and retention in our nation's military. And that is a program that a policy put in place by Barack Obama on his way out the door that, rightfully so, Donald Trump said, hey, we're not going to do this. This doesn't make sense. And that is the issue of recruiting transgendered individuals, people who have an issue with their gender into our nation's military. We're anticipating a policy coming forth any day now. But this has been the courts have stepped in. When the president said, we're not going to do this because it's not in the benefit of our military, the courts have stepped in. Are we not at a point of a real constitutional crisis in determining who's going to control our nation's military?
Yeah. Let me break this down just a little bit. Barack Obama said, if you are transgender and you're serving in the military, you may come out and serve openly. All right. That's one thing. But then he said, and by the 1st of July, 2017, we will start recruiting transgenders. In other words, you can come in if you are transgender. But those that he allowed to come out of the closet, we didn't know they were transgender theoretically. Okay. Then Trump comes along, and in August of last year, he says, hold on, I'm banning transgenders. What was left was, what do you do with the people that in good faith came out when President Obama said you can come out? Okay, so that's been the big thing. But the courts have now, three liberal judges have now said, no, Mr. Trump, you have no authority to ban transgenders from the military. No authority. Now, keep in mind, Barack Obama had the authority to let them serve, but Trump doesn't have the authority to ban them. No consistency there whatsoever. Now, what does that mean? Article 2 of the United States Constitution says the commander-in-chief is the president of the United States. He carries that authority. He determines the composition, the makeup, the readiness, and the utility of our military. So what you have is you have three judges that have usurped the constitutional power of the president. They are now in charge of the military. They now determine who can serve in the military. And how far do you want to take that? And where does it stop? What's the next thing that they can do with regards to our military? Do they get involved in operations now? Do they veto operations if the president orders the military into combat?
Could they theoretically then set the rules of engagement?
Absolutely.
This is a constitutional crisis.
Totally.
Just because it's an issue that is has been made political by the previous administration and by the media, it is an issue of military readiness because, as has been pointed out, these individuals, many of them, are not deployable.
That's right. And I want to also say, remember that there's a thing called the War Powers Act. Now, Barack Obama, when he sent U.S. forces into Libya to fight against Gaddafi's forces there, they said, look, he never consulted in any way with the Congress. So they said, well, the War Powers Act is going to kick in 90 days, and you've got to make a choice. Are you going to come and brief Congress, or are you going to pull them out? Because that's all you have left. And at 90 days, he said, it's unconstitutional. Barack Obama unilaterally decided that the War Powers Act was unconstitutional. Okay, so what we have is we have such a contradiction here. We got a president that's trying to do the right thing for the military. He's told by the courts you can't do it. You don't have the constitutional authority. But Barack Obama unilaterally decides what is constitutional with regards to the War Powers Act. That is inconsistent. It is. It shows the incredible bias with regards to conservative versus liberals.
And underscores why the courts are so important. General Jerry Boykin, as always, great to have you on the program and great traveling with you across the country.
Let's get to Georgia where it's warm.
Yeah, we'll work on that. To the Peach State we go. Well, folks, this goes back to the issue of the elections. This was front and center in the 2016 elections, and the rumors now that there may be another vacancy coming up on the Supreme Court. And, of course, the lower courts, just as important. We've got the courts, unelected tyrants in black robes that think they know better about what should take place in our military than the commander-in-chief who was elected by the people to do so. And it's a double standard. Barack Obama could do whatever he wanted. He did stuff that was beyond his authority. Now we have a president trying to correct it, and the courts are saying he can't. All right, folks, we're out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.